Thank you for listening to this message from Northwest Hills Community Church in Corvallis, Oregon. You can learn more about our church at nwhills.com. Today, Pastor Josh Karstensen is continuing a series on Ruth, where Naomi pleads with Orpah and Ruth to go back to Moab. But Ruth commits to Naomi and to the Lord by saying, "Your people shall be my people, and your God my God." On the surface, it seems risky for Ruth to go to Bethlehem and believe in God, but because God is real, she's anchored in. When it comes to relationships, what commitments and risks do you need to make this year? After the message, you're invited to download and fill out the Ruth Series Journal, which you can find on our website right next to the worship service video. Now, here's today's teaching.
Yeah, good morning. My name is Josh Karstensen. I'm the lead pastor here. Eventually, we will be in the book of Ruth, which is on page 222 in there. I'm going to say a few things up front. So some of you know that I got to spend about a month on sabbatical this summer, about the month of July. I spent some time meeting different churches, different leadership teams. But one of the great things that I got to do is just spend a ton of time with my family. And that was a blast. If you know me, you know that I am a super privileged dad. I've got three daughters. I got a 9-year-old, I got a 7-year-old, and my baby turned 5 yesterday. And so, yeah, man, life keeps going. And, you know, one of the cool things about being able to spend time with my wife and my kids is I felt like I got to watch my oldest daughter grow up a little bit in some really cool ways, particularly when it comes to taking risks. You know, if you know her, she's a little bit more reserved, and, you know, things like jumping off of big rocks into water or swimming in open water or, you know, things that feel a little bit risky, high places, you know, she may not have been like super into that, but this summer I saw her kind of develop in all new different ways, turning into this really cool, like, adventure buddy of mine. I'm like, man, this is so fun. Like, as a dad, I don't know, you know, some of you older dads got to watch your kids kind of go from like little kid and as they grow up, it's just super, super cool. And I watched my daughter learn to start taking some risk, which was really, really fun. One of the first things when I realized this is we were at Hume Lake Christian Camp. Some of you went there this summer, but it's a camp down in Southern California, and there is a rock that I used to jump off of as a kid. You know, it's not super high, maybe 8 or 10 feet. And we were walking around the lake, and I look at the rock and say, "Hey, Charlotte, you want to go jump off that rock?" And she goes, "Yes, I do." Which, first of all, is like, "Really? Sweet, let's go, let's go." And so we go, and she jumps off, and there's just high school kids everywhere, and she's like, "I want to do it again." Like, "Yeah, let's go. Let's do it again." And she wants to keep going. And, you know, inside, I've just got like tears just running down, like pure joy. Like, here's my baby. And she wants to go. And like, from that point forward, every time we'd go around the lake, she wants to jump off this rock and super fun. And then later in the week, I asked her, "Hey, do you want to go on the high ropes course?" And, you know, there's a high ropes course that's, you know, I don't know, it's up in the trees, maybe 30 feet off the ground. And primarily it's made for, you know, middle school and high school students. I think Gary went on it. He got really scared. We'll talk about that later. He was scared. He was nervous. Yeah. Charlotte can help you next time. But, so, you know, we get there, and it's not quite the camp thing. It's like some other people, and so it's mostly high school kids and some parents and myself and my 9-year-old, and we get there, and they're kind of giving us the instructions, and okay, this is what you need to do, and this is how you need to be safe, and you got to put your harness on, and you put your helmet on, and then they give you this, and I don't know what it's called. I tried to look it up. I've never seen anything like this before. It's like some sort of C-clamp with bolts on it that it's attached to your harness, and you put this thing on, and it follows a cable across the whole course. So like once you hook on, you can't get off. Like it's not possible. You can't pass the person in front of you. You can't get behind the person behind you. You're stuck on this thing until you go all the way through. And so, you know, we climb up, you know, the first thing's just like, there's like a skinny pole, and you just climb up to the top and you start. And so, you know, we're going along and, you know, slow and surely, and we were at the very end. I said, let's be the last people to go just in case, you know, you take forever and you're scared. And we'll make our way through. And, you know, I think about that and I, you know, you ask the question, is this risky for my daughter? You know, in some ways, like, it is risky, right? It's risky because it's unknown. Like, she's not sure if she physically can do some of the obstacles. It's risky because you're in front of other people, and if you don't know how to do it, it's embarrassing, right? If you're Pastor Gary and you wet your pants, like, that's risky. It's embarrassing. Sorry, my guy, he's good. And so, you know, you think about some of the risks that are involved. You could potentially fall. You could, like, scrape your knee. But is it, like, really that risky? Are you going to get seriously hurt? Like, no, you're anchored in. You're not going anywhere. Like, you can't fall more than just a couple of feet. So big picture, like she's pretty secure. So she goes all the way through and you know, we were slow, but we made it. And she gets to the end and there's another option where you can go up really high and kind of jump like a free fall type jump. She's like, I'm in, I want to do it, which is just, man, so much fun. It's awesome. And a couple weeks later, we get to another spot and we're out in the middle of nowhere. I mean, middle of nowhere. And we're at this river, and my daughter wants to go on a, like a little river walk, just me and her. And so we're going down the river, and you know, she's got her goggles on, and we're finding polywogs and frogs and trying to jump off of anything that we can. And we come across these two giant boulders that are in the middle of this river. And they'd clearly fallen in from the cliffs above at some point. And so she's swimming around, and she comes up, and she goes, Dad, there's like a tunnel between these two big rocks. Do you think we can swim in the tunnel? And so I say, well, let me see your goggles. And so I go down there and kind of look, and it's a very tight space. And it's between these two rocks, and there is no way on this planet that I'm fitting through this. And I don't think that my daughter can fit through it either. And you can't quite see to the end of it. And I come up, and she says, Dad, you should go through it. You should go through it. I'm like, I can't. There's no way I can fit. She's like, well, I really want to go. I want to go. I'm like, I don't know. That doesn't seem super smart. I really want to go. And so being the good dad that I am, I said, yeah, go ahead. You go try. I'm joking. Of course I did not let her do that. Man, you guys. I say, baby girl, I love you. It's not worth the risk. Like, I'd like to think you could get through, but maybe you can't. And honestly, that's like one of my ultimate fears is like being stuck underwater in something that you cannot move in. Like, that's awful. That's terrifying. So I don't let her go through. And ultimately, when we talk about two different situations, one is kind of risky, kind of, but not really because you're harnessed in. The other one has all kinds of, you know, dire consequences if it doesn't work out. And so today we're going to talk about risk. We're going to talk about what is safety? What actually is safety? And it's a word that's really becoming a really heated word in our culture. Like everything, like this is like the savior of our current world is this word safety. And so we're going to look at what is safety? What is risk? Right? Primarily when it comes to relationships and when it comes to our relationship with God. You know, so what does safety look like? What does risk-taking look like in our current day? One last story about risk. I was driving to work just a couple days ago, and I hear on the radio, Oregon health authorities have finally approved for spouses to begin kissing one another again during the middle of COVID, so long as you are both fully vaccinated and you'll be okay. So for any of you who've been like abstaining for 18 months, like you're clear, you're good to go. Oregon health authority says you can begin kissing. So just saying, true story, heard that on the radio. Good night. If that's you, we should probably see each other for other reasons. But we'll get into Ruth, sorry. In a world obsessed with safety, here we go, Ruth chapter 1. Let's stand and get into God's word. You're welcome for that intro. Maybe I'll skip it next service. 2:22, I'm going to read most of chapter 1, starting in verse 1. I'm going to reread what I read last week. Here we go. In the days when judges ruled, there was a famine in the land, and a man of Bethlehem in Judah went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. The name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife Naomi, and the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem in Judah. They went into the country of Moab and remained there. But Elimelech, the husband of Naomi, died, and she was left with her two sons. These took Moabite wives. The name of one was Orpah, and the name of the other, Ruth. They lived there about 10 years, and both Mahlon and Chilion died, so that the woman was left without her two sons and her husband. Verse 6, then she arose with her daughter-in-laws and returned to the country of Moab, for she had heard in the fields of Moab that the Lord had visited his people and given them food. So she set out from that place where she was with her two daughter-in-laws, and they went on the way to return to the land of Judah. So Naomi said to her two daughter-in-law, go, return, each of you, to her mother's house. May the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. The Lord grant that you may find rest, each of you, in the house of her husband. Then she kissed them, and they lifted up their voices and wept. And they said to her, no, we will return with you to your people. But Naomi said, turn back, my daughters. Why will you go with me? Have I yet sons in my womb that I may become your husband, or that may become your husbands? "Turn back, my daughters. Go your way, for I am too old to have a husband. If I should say I have hope, even if I should have a husband this night and should bear sons, would you therefore wait until they were grown? Would you therefore refrain from marrying? No, my daughters, for it is exceedingly bitter for me for your sake that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me." Then they lifted up their voices and wept again. And Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. And she said, "See, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. Return after your sister-in-law." But Ruth said, "Do not urge me to leave you or to return from following you. For where you go, I will go, and where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord do so to me, and more also, if anything but death parts me from you." And when Naomi saw she was determined to go with her, she said no more. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. You can take a seat. So kind of looking at a recap from last week, just a short one. We find ourselves really in this place towards the end of the reign of the judges, and it was a dark period in Israel's history, a period where most of the people were not following the Lord like they ought to, and there's a pretty common catchphrase throughout the story of the judges that we see at the very end, the last verse in the judges. And this is the phrase, everyone did what was right in their own eyes. And this is what happened with Elimelech, right? Here's a man, he's in the middle of famine, and it doesn't look good. Life doesn't look very promising. He's experiencing, obviously, a lack of food. It seems like there's probably no water, some sort of drought, which leads him to say, you know, I'm going to take the most reasonable option, and that is to move my family from Bethlehem to this place in Moab, which at first sight doesn't sound too risky. It seems like the reasonable option. It seems like something he ought to do until you go back and you learn that God's people were not supposed to go to Moab. There is a number of reasons, which we're going to talk about next week, why this was a bad move for them, why they were enemies, really enemies for over 1,000 years. But Elimelech makes this move, and he moves his family to Moab. And eventually, his two sons marry Moabite women, and Elimelech dies, his two sons die, and now Naomi is left with her daughter-in-laws, really in dire straits, right? They're in extreme circumstance with no future. It's pretty much a death sentence from here on out. There's no Social Security. There's no life insurance policy. She's got nothing. She's got no hope of really rebuilding any sort of secure future for her. So she starts to begin to talk with her daughter-in-laws about what it looks like for them to keep living. And through this story, we're going to look at kind of three major things. We're going to look at a lie, we're going to look at a commitment, and we're going to look at a risk. So let's look to the first part of this, and this is the point, a lie. So Naomi's in a rough spot, and she decides, okay, I've heard that the Lord has brought food back to Bethlehem, which is interesting because this is the first time that the Lord is mentioned so far in here, and she has some sort of semblance that God is involved, and so she's got some sort of belief that God can do something, and God was working in this people group, and so she takes her daughter-in-laws, and they begin this journey back home. So there's some sort of faith element here. There's something that says, okay, this seems reasonable. We'll go back home. God's going to provide if we move back home. But on the way home, she kind of has this panic moment. What are my two daughter-in-laws going to do? They're going to go back home. They're Moabite women. They're not going to be welcomed in my hometown. They're going to be seen as foreigners, as outsiders, as pagan idolaters and worshipers of false gods. Like, what am I going to do? And so she starts to plead with them. She says to them, hey, there's no future for you here. I can't provide for you. I have no way of providing another son for you. You haven't had children yet. The best option for you is to go back home, to go back to your family, and to try to start a life all over again. I've got nothing for you back in Bethlehem. And the lie that she believes up front, and we see this, I believe, in verse 13, is the reason behind all this. The reason why she thinks that she cannot provide for them is she says this in verse 13. She says, the hand of the Lord has gone out against me. She says, God has been against me since I've been out in Moab. He is not for me. I cannot provide for you. We are in a really, really rough spot. Right, and so as we kind of experience life, a lot of times we'll find ourselves in one of two places, and certainly had a couple conversations with people experiencing this last week, and one of the places is perhaps like Naomi, perhaps, where you find yourself and you really haven't been following the Lord for a long time. right? Like maybe you're disengaged in church. Maybe you're not reading the word like you're supposed to. Maybe you're just like blatantly living a heinously immoral life, right? Doing whatever things you want to do. And subsequently, life is really challenging. Things are not going well. And perhaps the thought is, man, God is not for me. He's not pleased with me. I have not been following him. So therefore, maybe God is angry at me. Maybe he's punishing me. You know, we can find ourselves believing these types of thoughts. We're going to see here how this is really a bit of a half-truth. The other side of it is maybe she was trying to follow the Lord. And this is where we just really don't know. We have to speculate a little bit about Naomi. Maybe she's just saying, hey, my husband wanted to go to Moab. I wasn't really on board. I kind of wanted to stay, but I wanted to love my husband. It seemed like the only option here for him. And so I didn't want to separate our family. And so I had to make a really hard call. And so I'm going to follow him to Moab. And after a while, things weren't going well for her. And so maybe she's saying like, God, like I've tried to do what's right. My life hasn't ended out great, therefore you must be against me. Right? Again, I've had a few conversations like that this week with people who are saying, man, I tried to do it right and things didn't work out, right? Whether it's, man, my kids aren't where they're supposed to be, whether it's, man, my career isn't where I want it to be, whether it's like my health is not where I want it to be. It can be really easy for us to be in a place where we feel like I've tried and it didn't work out. God's hand must be against me. This is the truth that Naomi believes. We're going to see what happens next when Naomi tries to convince her daughter-in-laws. She tries to talk to them about what's going to happen if they follow her and what's going to happen if they go back to their homeland. We see this in verse 15. We see her reaction, which is a really interesting reaction. She says, hey, I don't want you to go with me. God's hand is against me. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to go back to your country, to your gods. See how strange that is for someone who's supposed to be following the Lord? She says, hey, it's not working out for me. Go back to your gods. We see this in verse 15, right? Ruth, leave. Go with your sister-in-law back to your people, to your gods. This whole Yahweh thing doesn't seem to be working out. Let's try something different, right? This is a very common temptation for us, right? Like we might be in a season where for whatever reason, it doesn't feel like the whole Christianity thing is working out. And so we often find ourselves pushing ourselves towards doing what's right in our own eyes. Right? Maybe we're not quite going to other gods in this context. Like I don't have a lot of conversations with people saying, you know what, I tried the whole Christian thing, didn't really work out. I'm going to try Islam next Sunday. Right? I don't hear that very often. I don't hear someone saying like, I'm going to go Hindu. Really what we hear is more often, I'm going to try what's right in my own eyes. I'm just going to try to do my own thing. Like maybe I'll hold on to a little bit of this Christianity thing, but if it's not working out, we're going to try another god. And ultimately here, that's what Naomi is encouraging her daughters to do. Go try your own gods. Do what's right in your own eyes. So that's the lie that Naomi believes. Now let's look at the commitment. Naomi is begging Ruth and Orpah. I keep wanting to call her Oprah, but Orpah. So don't come with me. And Orpah does the reasonable thing in this context. Orpah says, okay, like I recognize that you don't have anything really to offer me, so I'm going to go back to my home. My parents are there. I've got extended family. They've got a farm. I can be taken care of. I have a future there. I have a hope there. But Ruth, she takes a little different approach, and we see this in verse 16, probably the most famous part of all of Ruth. We see this where Ruth responds to Naomi, and she says, do not urge me to leave you or to return from following you. For where you go, I will go, and where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there will I be buried. May the Lord do so to me, and more also, if anything but death parts me from you. We see two commitments here. The first commitment we see is to that of Naomi, right? Ruth says, hey, you're my mother-in-law. I'm committed to you. Where you're going to go, I'm going to go. I'm all in. I am hitching my wagon to you. We see this type of commitment oftentimes at a marriage ceremony. Maybe you've been to a wedding and you've heard this type of language, like where you're going, I'm going to go. Where you're going to die, I'm going to die. But all of it's predicated on a much bigger commitment that Ruth has already made. It's made on a commitment to the Lord. And we see this in the language of her actual, of her conversation with Naomi. And we see this primarily in the phrase in verse 17, your God, my God, your people, my people. See, it's not a future tense. If you break down the Hebrew here, it's not something that where Ruth is saying, hey, where you go, I will go and your God, you know, I can adopt him and he'll be my God as well. The actual literal sense of the Hebrew here is saying literally, your God is my God. Like, I've already made this commitment. Therefore, your people are my people. She's saying, I have met your God. I'm committed to him. Therefore, I am going to go with you. I will be committed to you from this point forward as I've made this commitment to your God. We see that somehow, some point, and it's not in the story, but she had this profound experience and encounter with God somewhere. Somewhere she heard this story where God rescued this people out of Egypt, right? Somewhere she heard the story where God parts the Red Sea, where God in the night provides a pillar of fire, where in the day there's some cloud of smoke, where people were hungry and God bought food, right? She had to have heard somewhere along the story where God, under Gideon, takes 32,000 men, whittles it down to 300, and they defeat an army, right? He had to hear that story. She had to hear that, right? She had to hear the stories of Joshua, who took an army and walked around Jericho 7 times, and just at the sound of trumpets and a nation yelling, all the walls collapse. Ruth had to hear that at some point. And so she makes a commitment. She makes a commitment to Naomi's God, to the God of the Hebrews, and she says, because your God is my God, your people will be my people, and I will follow you wherever you go. I will die where you die. God, help me if I do anything different. Right? And so this is the commitment that she makes. Which leads us to our last point here about taking risk. Does Ruth take a risk? Right, in some ways we're going to look at the risk that Ruth takes, and she does take a massive risk here going back to Bethlehem. But on the surface it's a risk. Deep down, truly, we're going to see that it's not a risk. Right, so here's Ruth following her kind of broke, bitter, backslidden mother-in-law. And she takes risks in at least 3 different categories. She takes a risk with following Naomi. She takes a risk in the return back to Jerusalem, or it's not back for her, but in the trip to Jerusalem or to Bethlehem. And she takes a risk with believing in God. Right, think about how risky it would be for her just to make this commitment to Naomi. Right, first of all, you've got someone who is changing her mind all the time. Like, hey, come back with me. Oh, we're along the journey. You know what? Forget it. I can't take care of you. Goodbye. Go back home. Like, there's a risk there. There's a risk with someone who says, I'm following the Lord, but you know what? It's not working out for me. So why don't you go try something else? Like, that's not a very stable person. This is not like a pillar of faith that we're talking about. This is someone who's really wishy-washy at best in her commitment to the Lord. And so following Naomi here is a pretty big risk for Ruth. Not only is it a big risk for her to go and follow Naomi, but it's a big risk for her to go back to, or for her to go to Bethlehem. We're going to talk about this next week, but you've got a people who are really at war with each other for about 1,000 years. It begins with Abraham and Lot, and so we're talking a long time ago, way pre-Moses. But you've got a splitting of the people group, which creates ultimately the Moabites and the Israelites. And so as a Moabite, as an enemy of Israel, her going to Israel is going to cause a lot of contention for a lot of people, rightfully so in a lot of ways. And so the move itself is incredibly risky. Not only that, but she's a widow, right? She's been married. She's been barren for a long time. And again, in that culture, in that context, that is very significant. She doesn't have a way to provide a future heir for their family. She doesn't have a way to provide security for her future. And so her going there is incredibly risky. And then she takes a risk with God, right? What if everything she heard about God wasn't true? Right? What if there's a natural explanation for everything? What if, you know, for whatever reason, Pharaoh just happened to let the people go and, you know, the winds were just right, that the sea parted, you know, all very naturally. And what if they just happened to hit the right rock and the spring opened up? And what if, you know, the sound waves of the army yelling, that alone was what caused the walls to fall? What if belief in God was not something that was going to lead her anywhere promising or anything that was true? That is a risk. Ruth takes a massive risk. But is it a bad move? Is it a bad move? Right? Is it the move where I let my daughter swim in this tunnel? Is it that type of move? Right? Ultimately, it hinges on one thing. Right? It hinges on whether or not God is real. Right? This move for Ruth hinges upon that one question. If God is real, then she's anchored in. Right? Just like my daughter on the high ropes course. If we are anchored in, yeah, there are small things that could happen. Right, you think about the risk that could happen. She could go back, or she could go to Bethlehem, and things might not work out. She might not find a husband. Right? She might be barren the rest of her life. She might die of starvation on the way there. That could be a story that happened. Perhaps that's a story that happened in other places that we don't read about. But is God still good in that situation? Yeah, God is still good if God is real. We think about, for us, we think about if God is real, what are the commitments that we need to make? And what are the risks that we need to make? We think about the story of Ruth and this massive commitment that she makes because of this belief that God is real, and ultimately it hinges on this one kind of phrase, your God, your people, my people. If God is real, it's a pretty big risk to put our faith in him because the ask is tremendous. The ask is, I want everything. Right? If God is real, he's asked us, I want your whole life. And in giving me your whole life, there's a lot of commitments I want you to make. And one of the primary commitments that I want you to make is a commitment towards people. And we're going to see here through the story how just one simple commitment towards Naomi changed the course of history for two nations and really for the rest of the world as Jesus is brought into the world through this redemptive relationship. So what does this look like for us? What is the commitment? What are the risks? The risk for you and I are, or the commitment for you and I is that we would be a people who are committed to other people. And it's easy to talk about it. It's easy to say, hey, we need to be committed to other people. But I'm telling you, I have had this conversation more than a dozen times in the last year. Committing to other people is one of the hardest things for our culture right now. Right? Basically, having friends is incredibly challenging for most people. You know, it comes easy to some, and we watch these shows of like all these people who seem to have these great relationships, or even like, you know, we look at our new interns and we watch this video and they just seem to be the best of all buddies, and our one pastor laughs, right? And so we love this idea of like, oh, everyone's so friendly, but most people are saying, I don't have that, I want that. So how do we get that? To get that, we have to take some massive risks. And so I'm going to finish it out today talking about what are some of the risks that it takes to build the relationships to help move this story forward to redemption. We're going to look at a number of risks. There's a lot of risks that come with making friends. And I'm telling you, it's not as simple as it sounds. Right? For one, we risk our comfort in relationship. You know, we live in a day and age where most things are kind of geared around us being comfortable of our wants. But when you have a friend, guess what? You got to sacrifice some of your comforts, right? You got to sacrifice some of your desires, right? When you're trying to build a relationship with someone else, you kind of got to ask them at times, well, what do you want to do? You know, where do you want to go eat? What are some of your desires? What movie would you like to watch? What conversation do you want to have? It's risky to have a friend when it comes to our comfort. Sometimes we have to risk our productivity to have friends, right? I can think of so many times when it's like, okay, I'm out front and I'm like, I'm mowing my lawn and a neighbor walks by, and you know how quickly you can run through the reel in your mind that says like, okay, if I stop, it's going to be 10 minutes and maybe 15, but I've got a lot to do right now, and there's weeds and this things need to be watered and things need to happen, and yeah, things do need to happen. But I also need to look at this person and say, hey, you're valuable to me. Like to have a friend means like, hey, I got to stop what I'm doing sometime to show someone else that you are really important. So it is risking our productivity, right? Not only is it risky for our productivity and our comfort, but for our privacy, right? Sometimes we think about having friends and what it means is to be vulnerable with people. To have a real friend means to say like, hey, here's where I'm struggling in my life. Like, here's where things aren't going that well. It may look great on the surface and it may look great on the outside, but to have a true friend is to say like, here's where I'm not reaching even my own desires, right? Having friends puts us out of our comfort zone. Being committed to relationships does. I was talking to a pastor a few months ago, and he's retiring, and he's kind of describing to me his life setup, and it sounds like the ideal place that a lot of us would want. He's got, you know, the nice house on a hill with some land, and he says, you know what, my wife and I, we're super comfortable up there. We love it. But for the sake of relationship, we're going to do something that's a little bit uncomfortable to us. We're going to sell our house on the hill, and we're going to go move into a neighborhood in town. Simply because that way we're around a whole lot more people. And I love the life on the hill. It's good. It's nice. It's quiet. It's serene. I can have people up there and host. But you know what? I can do a whole lot more when I'm in a neighborhood in town. It's a little bit more uncomfortable. right? We risk a smaller bank account to have friends, right? If you're struggling to have friends, easiest remedy ever, be generous, right? Stingy people don't have friends, right? Generous people have friends. It's so easy to have a friend if you are generous. Just say, hey, I'd love to buy you lunch. Hey, I thought of you. Hey, come on over, right? It's really easy to be generous and to use that towards making friends. Yeah, you may have a little bit smaller bank account when it's all said and done, but your kids are going to spend it all anyways, and who knows what they're going to spend it on, so good luck. Right? We risk our desires in friendships. Right? What do I mean by that? Sometimes we have to do things that we don't necessarily want to, and sometimes we think about a certain friend, or we think about certain relationships, and maybe initially we see a certain person, we think, there's not much in it for me in this relationship. Like, I don't really like the same things that they like. Like, they seem a little awkward. They seem a little goofy. We don't have a whole lot in common. I think it'd just be easier if I didn't commit there. But eventually what's fun is as you invest in people who are very different than you, God begins to mold you together, and you begin to look past your small differences and see the things that you have in common. And how sweet is that? Why? We risk feeling awkward, right? Making friends at my age and a lot of your ages is awkward. It's not like you're at the playground. It's like, hey, you want to play tag? Yay, we're friends. Like, that's really awkward in the office, right? Like, hey, want to play tag? Meet you at the copier. Like, just saying. It's hard. I was talking to a friend last week who's going through a really hard time, and I asked him, I said, hey, do you have any friends right now? This is a friend that I haven't talked to in a number of years, and he was just silent for a long time. It was probably 11:30 at night. We're on the phone, and he says to me, he says, Josh, it's really hard to make friends right now. Just hard to make friends at this stage in life. It's awkward. You know, it's challenging. It's filled with all kinds of different risks. It's so much easier just to spend time with our kids and to do our hobbies and to have our phones and to be entertained. Lastly, if God is real, to make friends and to be committed to people, we really have no risk at all. If we're anchored in, right, if we've got the harness that we need, then all the effort's worth it. We may scrape some knees. We may be embarrassed at time. We may feel like we can't get through the obstacle, right? But in the end, we need to be committed to people. And our church is committed to this, and we're committed in a couple different ways, and I think a lot of you know where this is going to go, but we're committed to making relationships with people, both Christians and non-Christians. Right? I think for non-Christians, you don't have to go too much further than our own families, people in our immediate circles of life, whether that's kind of neighbors or coworkers, friends from different places. I think it's a little bit harder sometimes to make Christian friends, and so what does that look like as well? Right? Particularly when it comes to a church. We need to be a church that's committed to people, and so the primary way that we do this is through community groups. All right, so we're going to talk about this for a few minutes. I'm going to bring up a friend here in just a minute, but we have one of the sole heartbeats of what we do here is Sunday mornings, but beyond Sunday mornings is to say we are going to commit to a smaller group of people, ultimately, and as simple as I can say this, to commit to friendships. And it's not just friendship for friendship's sake, right? It's friendship's sake for the sake of growing in our faith with one another. Like, to have genuine friendships where we can say, hey, how's your life going? Are you following the Lord like you should be? This is where I'm struggling. How are you doing? How can I pray for you? Right? We've got a number of these different groups going, and today is the day that we get to introduce them once again. And as we're going to introduce them, we're going to share a little bit about some of the details of what these look like. But ultimately, all we're trying to do is we're trying to create small groups of people to have friends, to commit to one another, ultimately because we want to change the world. And we're going to see through the story of Ruth that friendships do change the world. And so a couple things before I have Travis up here in just a minute. When it comes to community groups, some of you are very familiar with community groups. You've been in them for a long time. And so I'm going to throw out a couple challenges, a couple of risks, right? It may be risky for you, but I'm saying if you've been in a group for 10 years, maybe challenge yourself in a new way this season. Right? Maybe that risk for you is to say, I need to try something new. I need to be available for new people to join, right? Maybe I don't need to be with the same people that I've been with forever, and maybe I can keep those relationships over here, but maybe I can start some new relationships too so that other people can get more friends as well, right? Maybe a risk for you this year would be, I've been here forever and I hear about it every couple months and you talk about groups, but I've never actually joined one because I've got either too much going on or I feel too uncomfortable and I feel like I don't fit in for whatever reason. Maybe the risk for you this go around is to say, you know what, I'm going to sign up. I'm just going to try to show up. It's only 8 weeks for the first term. Maybe I'm just going to do that. Maybe that's the risk that you need to take this morning. Right. Lastly, I think of a risk, and that is to go deeper in friendships this year. You know, it's one thing to have friends and just to talk about like, hey, the Beaver game, man, that was so great. And let's pray for your hip. And Pastor Josh's legs hurt. We can pray for him. But maybe your risk this year in community is to be the first person who says, you know what, guys, I'm really struggling here. Like, it looks like I've got things pulled off together. But in the end, here's where I'm hurting. And maybe you're going to risk that first spot of vulnerability. And I promise you, when that happens, like the floodgates open up, everyone else goes, oh, good, you're normal too. Right? It's not that risky. Like, you may feel awkward for a little bit, but it is so worth it. So I'm going to bring up Travis here. He's going to share a little bit about his interactions with community groups and share a little bit about how we can get connected here. Then in a minute, we're going to bring up a bunch of leaders and all be excited and sign up all together, and we're going to change the world.
Awesome. Thank you, Josh.
Yeah.
As Josh said, my name is Travis Larson. My beautiful wife is the one that actually did announcements earlier today. But yeah, I just want to share a little bit about how community groups have impacted me. And actually, what I was going to share was about risk-taking, and so very appropriate. We got married. We've been, my wife and I have been in community our entire lives, whether with our family. Both of our families are believers. Me in youth group, Chris with good family friends growing up. We were in great community in college. And then right before we got married, we were in a community group here at Northwest Hills. But right when we got married, I had an internship up in Portland. I had never been outside of Corvallis living. And so it's a big city. I worked for the city of Portland. And, you know, we're like, okay, it's a six-month internship. What do we invest in? We've been in these long-term communities for so long that we missed and wanted to be a part of. And so we got back from our honeymoon, started going and looking at a few different churches. And I think the third church we went to, it was like, oh, pastor's nice, great sermon, good music, not quite as good a voice as JJ, but you know, we're like, we're okay, we got this. And
it's a high bar.
And they said, oh, we have an evening service. It's different. It's just out on someone's property outside of town. We're going to pray because they were building this new high school right by this person's property. And so we're like, cool, let's go to that. And we go to service. They had free food, which I was like, sweet. I now have to cook for myself because I had free food in college. So that was nice. And we get there. And
it wasn't actually free. I'm just saying. It's a lie our world tells us. Sorry, keep going.
I get to the church, this outdoor service, get our sandwich, we're listening, and as soon as service ends, a couple comes up to us. Sorry. And they later told us they noticed how shiny our rings were. And they just instantly were like, you're new. You just got married. And they approached us and just said, hey, you know, it looks like you don't know anyone. Would you be interested in coming to our community group next week? Our group starts in a week, because at this point it was about fall, but we'd love to have you over for dinner this week and get introduced. And we were in this weird crossroads of, okay, we're here for now at this point like 5 months, like what is that worth? And it impacted us greatly. Just that intimate community when we were away from our family. When I practiced, I did not tear up, but it was great. It definitely made us think about the way we look at community. And so my urge to you, whether you are a college student, a traveling nurse, someone who is at Northwest Hills for a short while, there is never too short of a time to be involved in Christian community. And for the people that have been here for decades or hope to be here for decades, for those people that are here in your eyes, for a blink of an eye, you can have an immense impact on them. So coming back to Northwest Hills, it was kind of weird because when we first moved up to Portland, we were like, Northwest Hills, we're leaving. And then it was like, oh, we're leaving this community that became our second family so quickly. And so we joined a community group again, And later, through Josh's urges, we were told to start a new group, and that group spawned into multiple groups, and now we've just seen these groups grow and flourish and have seen that same community that we were given to other people. And so now, been helping Josh a little bit to kind of lead groups, just do some care and check-ins and some logistic stuff. And it's just a great joy because everyone has those stories. I mean, if you talk to anyone with one of these little name tags after church, you can hear stories of how their groups have impacted them. Just looking at our groups at Northwest Hills, we have about 30 groups, so quite a few. About 250 of our members are in a group, which is a significant amount, which is so cool to see how many people are involved. Our groups average about 8 people, but that doesn't include kids. So if you're in a group with families that all have kids, you might be outnumbered, kids to parents. But it's just such a great joy. We have people leading groups that are in their 20s. We have people in their late 70s leading groups. We have people that cater towards one demographic. We have people that cater towards multi-generational, any stage of life, any part of your walk of faith. We have people that are new to the faith, people that have known Jesus for their entire lives. I would urge you to look and see what community can do for you and for the people that God's calling you to. Again, after service, there's these people with name tags. If you're here today, if you're online, I encourage you to go on our website at the Connect tab. You can click Join a Community Group and see what all of our groups are. It's a great way to see the diversity, see who's in it, and then just call them. Many of them have their phone numbers online. You can talk to them, see what they're up to. But for people that are here, after service, all of our community group leaders are going to be hanging out in the lobby, in the courtyard. Just talk to them. Even if you're already in a group, if you are looking for a group but have no idea who to talk to, just find someone with a name tag and ask them, what is one way God has used them to impact others or through this group, or that God has used other people to impact them? And I'm sure they will have stories. You actually reminded me, just when you finished your sermon, of a couple summers ago, our community group was at a friend's house. And it was one of those times all of us guys were together to kind of share what was going on in life and pray. And it was one of those days where just no one was opening up. We're all tired. It's, you know, end of a work day. It's a hot summer day, and we're outside, not under the shade. And we're just kind of like, yeah, it was a bad day. It was a bad day, blah, blah, blah. And I remember we'd gone like 3/4 way around the circle of like the 8 or 10 dudes that were there. And one guy kind of opened the door slightly to their life, what was going on. And the next person was kind of like, okay, I'll open up a little bit. And then someone that already spoke was like, okay, guys, I have something to share. And man, the room or the outdoor space just instantly changed. We were praying for one another, interceding, just sharing in the joys, sharing in the sorrows. You totally talk to someone, you will hear many stories of how groups have impacted them. We now want to actually bring out our community group leaders.
Yeah, so part of our kingdom prayer, we're gonna bring our leaders out here. We're going to pray for them. We're going to pray for you. We got one song to kind of close it out. So leaders, come on up. You can come on in here. I would also just say, as Travis said, reiterate, like the easiest way, you can go on our website, nwhills.com. Either come up on stage or come up underneath here. This is fun to see. We believe in this here, so beautiful. Go our website, easiest way to sign up for a group or find someone today in there. Come on up, we'll just go nice and cozy and beautiful. So what we're going to do right now is we are going to pray as a church. We're going to pray for everyone who is a leader. We're going to pray for those who are going to take risks in the next week and who are going to sign up for a group. It's not a huge risk. It's 8 weeks. It's an 8-week term starting this week. There are a number of us up here who are kind of first-time leaders, brand new group, myself included. So I don't want to be at my house Wednesday night by myself. So please, some people, sign up. I mean, actually, I do. I like that. But for the sake of community, I don't want that, right? We want people to sign up. And so if we had time, we'd go around and introduce every single one of these couples and people leading. But right now, we're just going to pray for everyone here. So I'm going to ask that you would stand with us. We're going to pray for the meetings, the homes, the conversations, the relationships, the young, the old, all together as we take radical risks, committing to relationships as we believe that relationships help bring reconciliation to the world through Christ. So, Father God, we thank you for every one of these leaders. God, we recognize it's risky to lead a group. We risk our time. We risk feeling uncomfortable. We risk not feeling like we're succeeding. God, we risk all these things, but for every one of them, Lord, we know that the risks are worth it because they are opening up their lives and they're saying, Jesus, you have changed my life, and I want to be available to help you in the process of changing others' lives. And so we know that church is something that happens here on Sundays, but we know it happens in the lives of all of us throughout the week. And one of the ways that we get to experience that is in different places through all kinds of different groups. And we want people to be engaged. We want people's lives to be changed. And we just pray that no matter what the risk is you're asking for each of us, that we'd be willing to take it this year. That this week, tonight, today, right now, we would come talk to someone. We'd go on the website and we'd fill up, okay, you know, for the next 8 weeks, I'm committed to a once a week gathering with this group of people. And Lord, who knows from there what might happen as far as how you can change the world. One act of obedience from Ruth, who said, your God, your people, my people. God, that we would be a people who would say, because you are real, we're committing to people, and an easy way to commit to people is this. So God, bless these leaders, bless their homes, bless their relationships as they guide and love and lead your people. We pray all these things, Jesus, in your name. Amen.
Thanks for listening to today's teaching from Northwest Hills Community Church. We hope you find ways to apply the gospel to your life. And be sure to check out our website, nwhills.com, where you'll find ways to engage, including resources like our application questions. Thanks again for listening.